Wendy, are you ready?
I'd like to welcome everyone to our work session of the City Council meeting October 21st, 2025. I'd like to excuse Councilmember Knowlton, who's traveling, and Councilmember Baskin will probably join us at some point in the night, but she's also at another event. Our first item is a report on the action items related to policy for repair of the public sidewalks. Ken?
Thanks, Mayor. This is going to be mostly a report by our Assistant City Manager, David Franson, but I wanted to kind of tee it up a little bit. We've been studying and working to try to understand what to recommend to the council and how to move ahead with this issue. We've looked at a lot of different cities and how they handle things. Some cities are using ordinances, which I think, as we discuss this in tonight and in future meetings, you might want to think in the back of your mind that perhaps we might want to create an ordinance that describes the council's wishes a little bit better than a policy, and something that we could use as we interact with the public. But cities treat this issue of sidewalk repair in all kinds of ways, and we're not necessarily going to go through an overview of that, but we've looked at that, and David will explain that often this is a question of, do we like sidewalks more or trees more? And you'll understand what that means as we go through this presentation. But I just wanted to say a couple of things, though, before we turn it over to David. He's done great work. His staff has done really great work. They've mapped, as we would expect in their department, they've mapped the location of all of these problems. And he'll walk you through what we're currently doing and some of the policy choices that you might have as we talk about this more. And I would also say we might want to wait to make any policy decisions. It's really on the agenda for a reporting item, but it would be good to have council members Knowlton and Baskin with us if we're going to really come up with a policy or a set of ordinances. So having said that, I'll turn it over to you, David.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. So, thank you for that setup, Ken. We'll jump into it. Obviously, it's a growing problem, quite literally, and we'll try to kind of to show that and describe that. And I appreciate the way Ken set that up, because I always say to my guys, I'm like, it's really easy to point out problems, and it's not always easy to fix them. Like Utah's red zone offense and things like that right now, like it's easy to say, but you can't necessarily give the – there's 20 different alternatives, right? Like a better run game, better pass, whatever, coaching.
I thought Utah's offense was perfect.
Well said. Anyway, so tonight's more, again, just for conversation, but we kind of wanted to throw a bunch of stuff at you, show you kind of a good example of what we're dealing with and what other cities are doing with this. So this is the survey says, the latest map. You can see just the different small, medium, large issues with the cracks. It's about like half inch, up to an inch and a half is large. Anything over an inch and a half is replacement. We'll get into a little bit more depth, but you can see how vast that's getting. We do a pretty good job of keeping records of, and we keep getting better at everything, but kind of how much they cost for us to take care of these. So we're not trying to throw a sticker shock at you, because we just keep chopping away at the problem. But you can see, if we were to go out and fix them all today, that would be quite the cost. And the problem would still exist if there's still the trees, right? So so it's kind of interesting when you look at the map from a few years ago. and you could see just literally how much it's grown. We were still tracking, we were still repairing, we were still looking at it, and we've been working on it, you know, spending the budget on it every year, working towards this. So I've used this example before, but I think it's a good one. So this is off 1100 going into Foxborough right there, and that tree is on a it's on private property. You can see where that sidewalk's pulled up. You can see how bad that actually was. We replaced it. So this is a good example because I got good pictures of it too. But what we've done with a lot of these is our crew will go in just like this. We go get it ready. We prep it, get stuff ready for the contractors. We batch everything because we don't have to pay short loads with concrete. So we'll get, you know, a few locations together. They'll come hit them for us all at once. We save money that way. I think we're doing it the smart way. We're trying to be, you know, fiscally conservative with this and try to take care of these things. So that project, roughly 1,600. Tree's still there, though. So, you know, that's kind of the problem we're dealing with. And I'm just going to throw a bunch at you kind of just quickly here. But you look at the costs associated with just repairing these concrete costs, you know, and labor and hauling the stuff to the dump. There's more people get kind of sticker shock with everything, but I don't, you know. And some of these, the pricing will look like it's mismatched, and it's maybe just due to the size of the load or how many we did at the same time. But so this one, 26, for that three sections right there, 24. You'll see in all these pictures, there's trees close to them, you know, 16, 8. Again, tree, 23 here for those three panels.
David, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So as I looked at, especially the first two, seems like we could have grinded those. They didn't seem like very much to totally replace.
So we always grind if it's an inch and a half or below. So, I mean, it might just be kind of the way it looks on the picture,
okay.
But it's over an inch and a half if we replaced it.
Okay.
So again, three panels there. Pretty spending. Sometimes it's just more labor too, like sometimes with the roots and stuff. So this one isn't necessarily on sidewalk, but part of our concrete budget is we're showing because part of our concrete budget goes to replacing this type of thing too, like waterways and things like that. So again, one more there, a couple panels, 27. We do a really good job. I don't know the full story with this one. There's no tree, but it was a cleaner, simpler thing, so obviously it was less. So there's some range in this, too. Just wanted to show you a variety. But, you know, an average repair here was around $2,200, and just for one square of concrete can be up to around $1,000 when you start tying in labor, truck time, hauling the stuff to the dump, everything that's involved, so... It wasn't necessarily this neighbor that said this, but this is the thing we commonly run into. I'm just using it as an example. We've had people, yeah, you need to fix this sidewalk, but don't you dare touch my tree. Is some of the problems we've ran into with people. Kind of tough, you know, because you're going to invest $2,000-$3,000 in something that's the same thing's going to happen. So the other part of this is not necessarily sidewalk, but, you know, our policy, our 811 policy. This, you put a snow load on these trees, and this is why our guys struggle a lot of the time with, people say we don't hit areas. People say, you know, you didn't get close enough to this. We can't, or we're going to take the tree out. You put a snow load on those trees, and they're going to hang down even lower. So just to kind of illustrate the tree issue. So here's the grinding. The more affordable approach, this is what we try to do. Again, anything inch and a half below, we can grind. We get complaints that people don't like the look of this as much, but... It is clearly the easiest and most cost-efficient way for us to handle them. Here's just the last couple years of some areas we did, and we've been focusing more on where kids walk to school. In these areas, in the past, we've been focusing on the bigger trip hazards. Here again was the 2023, a little bit more. There's bigger issues in that area, so it was a little bit more cost-wise. So the past few years, it's regularly been around $60,000. And like I said earlier, that doesn't just include sidewalk. And we've been doing about $20,000 worth of grinding each year. But it's difficult because, again, the trees are still there. A lot of the problems that are causing this still exist. So I like how Ken worded it. I mean, do we we value trees. I think trees, we all like the canopies. It's cool. But as we jumped into this and we started doing a lot of research on this, if it's kind of wordy here, but really most of the municipalities, they have some sort of ordinance that puts it on the adjacent property owner. Some cities do share in that cost. There's a million, like my Utah offense reference, there's a million different ways kind of to handle this. Some of them do it with, it's all on the owners. Some of it, cities taking a burden, and some of it's 50-50 splits. But the cost-sharing programs are very common out there. So, but the majority of the cities we talked to, and Ken and I reached out, Ken reached out to a bunch of these other ones, because we looked at what the policies and stuff were online and then talked to them separately too. Most of the cities won't do anything unless the tree's gone, is what we found. So here's kind of a quick chart, and I we don't really need to go into the weeds, but you see like most of the responsibility does fall on the resident or the owner. When you look at other cities, I try to do everything kind of in this area. Again, a variety of the way that they do the cost sharing or if the city handles it. We did, as we talked to other cities, found kind of a mismatch with what their policy says and how they were handling some of it. And I think there's probably some good fluency to that where like you could, you know, the city could take on a cost if they felt like it was the city's issue or whatever. But it's interesting to see that most of them are putting that back on the property owners. So we just thought we'd throw this out there, throw this information out there. I think there's really two big questions here. Like, when do we make repairs and where do we make repairs? I mean, do you focus on school zones? Do you focus on the most used sidewalks where the trails, school zones, urban corridor? What other cities are doing? You make no repairs unless the tree is removed, or do you just go to keep tackling? What we've mostly done is handle the worst ones, the biggest trip hazards. That's most of our focus has been, and then school zones. And then the other big talking point is who's going to pay for it? How do you want to keep moving forward? Like I said, I think there's a million different ways we could go with this, and we just wanted to kind of throw it out there to you guys. So
I have a thought. A lot of times people want to save the tree or they're part of it as long as they know the city's paying. Have you ever tried negotiating? I don't know how it's been done in the past, but the city will pay if we remove the tree. We'll split if you'll put in a different kind of tree. Yes, you can keep the tree, but all of the cost will be on you. Or no, you cannot keep the tree. If you don't keep the tree, then all of the cost will be on us. Something where there's a negotiation of to mitigate this problem in the future will financially benefit you. But if you want to keep the problem, then next time 100% of the cost, because this will happen again, is on you. Things like that. I don't know how we've done it in the past, so maybe help. So,
yeah, and I think that's why we're here, is because we really don't have anything to lean on like that right now. So for the most part, we've just said, well, our budget's limited. We're hitting the biggest, baddest, ugliest stuff when we can.
100% us.
Yeah, and that's how we've been handling it. But again, I mean, this problem's not getting better. So,
do you mind if I take a shot at that? Those are great questions, council member. And what I found is I talked to different cities, and David's done a lot of research too, but recently, before this presentation, I reached out to seven cities, surrounding cities that we knew had programs. And there's really a variety of ways to handle it. One of those cities actually said, we'll do the first repair on the city, and if there's further damage from a tree, we won't pay for future repairs. And so that's a position they've taken.
Does that include new ownership of the property?
Probably, yeah, probably transfers to a new owner. But interestingly, Bountiful, and I talked to Gary the most about this, Gary Hill, that is, they have consciously said, We are a city that wants to preserve trees, and they have consciously put that ahead of, in priority of fixing sidewalks. And so they don't encourage tree removal. So it's and the reason David mentioned it the way he did is it's really common for cities to say, we'll replace the sidewalk, but you have to take out the tree. And I think in the case of Bountiful, they don't even do that because that tree canopy is really important to them. I think that's a course that we could take if that's what we wish, and that's, again, why it's unfortunate that we're missing 2 out of 5, because I think that's an opinion that we should all talk about. The other way we divided this up is what's on your screen, because it may be that we value certain sidewalks that are part of connections and that are heavily used, or that people walking to school or walking to work or riding a bike to work or that are connected to a larger system of trails. So that brings to mind Center Street and going up into the foothills and clear out to the west. And so that's an area where we could say, okay, we have limited funds every year, and we're going to make certain that those locations are convenient and safe and stay in good repair. And then we just, and then we have some other way to, over time, or with, if we wanted to share 50-50 with property owners inside of neighborhoods, we could do that. Or have a different program for bad locations within neighborhoods. So I recognize, and I do have a risk, we all have a risk management role in the city. We've had a couple of, in the years that I've been the city manager, we've had a couple of significant pedestrian accidents. People have tripped and fallen and had to go to the hospital on 2 occasions in the last 8 years that I'm aware of. We may have had others, but those are the two that I'm aware of. And we don't want that to happen to anybody, of course. But this is one of those times where we wanted you to see the sort of the full picture.
Yeah.
And as trees grow, and we purposefully have planted trees. And the best example of that is the Foxborough neighborhood. And now that was approved prior to me being here, but I lived through most of the build out of Foxborough, and it was always represented in the DRC that we were requiring trees to go in the park strips. And I think we've done that, and you can see that when you drive through Foxborough.
So I have a question on that, Ken.
Yeah.
We've talked about certain trees that their root systems go down and not out. Were those type of trees required in Foxborough? Because we're seeing now that there's a lot of need in Foxborough. So does that mean that thought process has not worked well?
I don't know that I can answer whether that conscious decision was made. You have an answer for that. I have more to say.
No, I can just answer that the particular type of tree was required. The homeowners had to plant a certain tree.
Well, and I'll do a caveat where, so 30 years ago, when we hired professional people to put our sprinklers in and do some landscaping, and we had 4 trees put in our park strip, and they said that they put in the trees that were recommended by the city. I don't think we've had any problem with sidewalks, but I think TJ once said, no, those aren't recommended trees. So, but again, I don't think we've had a problem. And yeah. I'm notorious for underwatering my yard. My wife's always complaining about I don't water enough. So I think if the right tree is in the spot, it can make a difference.
And how long ago was that, Sherry? We put that list together. 5 years ago. So we, I mean, Sherry led that charge, and we did that list that's now that got the requirements, but that was 6 or 7 years ago that we did that. So a lot of this stuff was done before, and I mean, yeah, you see, TJ's not wrong. You go look at some of the trees that are planted in the park strip, and you're like, are you kidding? That's going to be a problem, right? And I think it's good. I'm glad Ken set it up the way he did, but I mean, if this was debate class, I could probably argue almost every side of why it makes sense to do this or do that. And that's where I think, especially as staff, to have some direction, because we get people that, you know, they have a tiny crack and they want three pieces that are replaced by the city, or you get, you know, my house, we had one that's still in front of my house. It's like a huge crack in front of my parents' house, and I got mad air off that thing on my BMX. And I didn't want it replaced, but, you know, so I just think that there's a lot of different opinions, and we just kind of wanted to paint a picture for you guys of kind of what we're up against, so.
Well, follow-up to the follow-up, as far as Foxborough goes, is it your opinion then, using this newer list that you guys came up with in the last 6 years or so, that if trees were replaced with this newer list, that 10 years from now we would not have these root problems with this new list of trees, that perhaps the trees that Foxborough used didn't all fall under this new list, and so that's why we're seeing problems. But if we went forward with maybe a replacement program, do you think that this new set of trees would do better?
I would hope so. I'm like the last. I don't know the names of the trees at my own house. What I'm horrible. I planted what they told me to. But yeah, they were experts, people that knew what they were doing. Sherry did a really good job leading that group, and we had smart people, and smarter people than me in that room that knew about where trees belong.
I will say one of the challenges in our city is that I don't believe that we have yet, well, maybe we have now, but I don't believe we had the proper width of public park strip. And so we might have a tree that will have a minimal impact on, you know, as much as you can on the roots for the surrounding area. But I think even then, if your park strip is not wide enough, we're going to see some curb damage or some unhealthiness to the tree or other problems, even if you pick the right tree. And so as I've gone around the city, and I think in some of these examples that David showed, I see park strips that are pretty narrow, between 3 and 4 feet wide, and I've never really thought that was quite enough room to make sure that our trees could grow up healthy and not cause damage to surrounding concrete. So that's another issue. And I think David's correct that the problem is going to get worse. And so we do need some policy direction, not this minute tonight, but we definitely, this was on the action items. And so we wanted to, this was the date we had as a goal to report back to you. I think we'd like to take your feedback and feedback from Ted and Lisa too, and maybe from here come up with some more specific policy direction for you to consider, and I think we can do that. But I don't think I'll ever recommend that we spend $2 million to fix every sidewalk in the city. If you want to do that, that would be your choice, and you can tell us to do that, and we'll figure out a way to do it. But I think it would be better if we could come up with either an ordinance or a policy, some formal written response that we can share with the public when they ask, and that will guide us as we put together budgets and we put together capital projects and we put together contracts for concrete companies that we want to use. It will really help us in what to do every year. And I do think we need to do something every year, which we have been doing. So,
can I ask a question? Is, you know, that one that's in my neighborhood that we've talked about before, is there a way of fixing that sidewalk and saving that tree, or is that one that you can't, because it's so big?
I keep using that picture, and I don't even know if we fixed that. Is that fixed?
No.
Know? It's not. That's just so close, and that park strip's so small, I don't think there's any way for that one. And we could cut roots out and hope it survives, but it's, I mean, you're...
I am very intrigued by this idea of a replacement program. And as David and I have driven around and looked at different locations, and as we did our first year of this tree program that we did earlier this year, I think putting trees in people's front yards away from sidewalks is a good trade-off if we want to add that to the list of possible ways to address this issue, like an issue like the place next to you. If that tree came out, perhaps there's a replacement of a tree in the front yard nearby, and then the sidewalk is not at risk in the future. It's not as good because people are really committed to their park strip trees. It doesn't matter that the park strip's not wide enough. People love park strip trees, and I do too. But that might be something we want to explore as well.
And I do wish that people knew how much you worried and looked at this, because you have looked at this a long time, and it's a real concern. You want to save the tree. You want to fix the sidewalk and make everybody happy, and it's a hard thing to fix.
Yeah, it's tricky, you know.
For
we've
sure.
really tried to work with a lot of homeowners, and I think we've made a lot of people happy, too, with some of it. We tried to make good decisions based off, and that's where, like, without really a strong policy, I think we've had good support from the residents. I don't think we've had any major clashes with anybody or anything. So I think we've done all right, but I think, I mean, it's coming, right? Like, you can see it.
Thank you for this topic. I know this is something that has already been a lot of work and is going to be in the future. When I think about the city council sharing some type of policy or idea structure that could help make decisions, I think there are a couple of other priorities in place that could help inform that. One of those is that we are like a identified tree city. And so I think as a city, we have already made a commitment that we prioritize and value trees. And I very much support the idea that we aren't going to ask people to cut down their trees, or if they do, that they replace them. And maybe we have a replacement program. And then another is that we have invested a lot of energy and resources into being an active transportation city or a walkable city, which means I think sidewalks should be a priority, because having disrupted sidewalks makes them less walkable. And when I've gone to the senior lunch bunch, that's something that has been brought up multiple times, that it's harder for especially older folks in the city to walk around because the sidewalks might make it a falling hazard. But we've already, like, kind of as a council, prioritized we want to be a city with active transportation. And then the third one is that one thing I really am proud about in North Salt Lake is that when it comes to capital projects, there is such expert proactive maintenance planning that goes into place. And so I would be more of the mind that sidewalk maintenance is part of the capital improvement plans for the city. I don't know what the lifespan of a sidewalk is, that if we have to replace the sidewalk after those trees in Foxborough are, 10, 15 years old, so that maybe the lifespan of a sidewalk is 15 years. There is a lifespan to the roads around the city, and we continue to replace the roads and maintain the roads, and I think that's an important use of tax dollars, and maybe our sidewalks are part of that as well. And I don't know how long after you do this repair, if the tree remains, do you know how long until it will likely be disrupted again? Is there any time frame for that?
We've seen it quick. We've seen it not affected.
Is quick like a year? Is it like 3 years? What is quick?
I mean, I don't know. It just depends on make of the type of the tree, the location. There's so many factors.
Yeah. So I like the idea of a replacement program. I like the idea of cost sharing. I like the idea of... If the disruption is, 1.5 inches or less, we will grind it, but we will grind it once. And then if you want to have it ground down a second time, here are some referrals. Here are some contractors. Or maybe the city does a cost share program where we have a little crew that does the grinding, but it's bills out to the residents, however that met. But I like the idea of like, yeah, we'll do it once, but not the second time. Same with replacement. Yeah, we'll do it once, but not the second time, especially if you're keeping the tree. But we actually want you to keep the tree. This is just one of the known outcomes of the tree. And then I will say, for as far as Foxborough in particular, which I do think a lot of these, although not exclusively, because I know down here in this Midtown area, there are a lot of those neighborhoods that really do have some disruption in their sidewalks. But one thing that has happened in Foxborough is that the homeowners were required to put trees in their park strip. And so I think that puts a different kind of conception in homeowners of, but you told me to plant this tree, and now you're telling me that I have to deal with the repercussions of the particular tree as well. One thing that I think mitigates the problem out there is also is that the soil is so compacted and is clay that I think all trees tend to keep their roots high, and that instead of digging deep down, because the soil is just so not conducive to that, regardless of the type of tree that it is. And I think maintaining trees is one thing that makes our city beautiful, and I would really hate to feel like we are taking them away in large capacity across the whole city. So I think keep the trees. I think maybe we just start paying for more capital projects that include sidewalk maintenance. I don't know what the lifespan of a sidewalk is supposed to be, but maybe that's just part of what we start spending. And then some cost sharing. I think that's a great idea as well.
I did forget to mention to say, it was on my one slide, but there's a few cities too that have a crew that's all they do. And there's big cost that goes along with that too, but that's how some of these cities are knocking that out. And I failed to mention that earlier.
So. I was wondering about, we have a construction kind of crew that could they pour cement?
West Jordan, there's a few cities like that, that's literally all they do is concrete.
Well, I'll definitely echo that we're Tree City USA, and that maybe we should have a policy that we don't replace sidewalk twice, and but find a way to save trees. And I can tell you right now, we're not going to spend $2 million, so maybe we attack the problematic ones and kind of nurse ourselves along, use a lot of red paint out there and get there. Well, thank you, David.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Mayor, I have one more thought. Now that I've asked all the questions, so sorry. I always try and understand first before I can form thoughts, but I very much agree with what's been said, and I feel like infrastructure is the backbone of what people expect from tax dollars and from city safety and infrastructure, which are really kind of hand in hand. So I also very much prioritize that we maybe even attack this more aggressively as far as putting more funds. And I know you're really good at measuring. And so, you know, measurable yearly improvements, so we can say we've tackled this percentage of our city's sidewalks, starting, of course, with the higher impact sidewalks first. And, of course, policy-wise, we'll have to look at what kind of funding that would require. But I'm going to talk about arts a little bit later, and I think art is so important to the city, but not before infrastructure and safety. Those are our priorities first. And so I very much support what's been said. I do like the idea. I think most people are more amenable to change when there's either a financial incentive or a financial cost. And so when you're thinking of putting together policy, I love the idea of an incentive with a tree replacement, especially for those problematic, like in Tammy's neighborhood. That tree's just going to be a problem. And so maybe a replacement, because trees also do have a life cycle, and so it's probably fairly old with how big it is, and there's probably a lot of those. So maybe a replacement where the city will pay for the full cost of the repair if we have a cost-sharing program, if the tree is replaced, or the resident does bear some of the burden of the cost, or we could look at a one-time, but second and third, that's all on the resident. But I do think we might get more success if we have a cost-sharing policy under certain conditions. And then we pay pay for 100%. They don't have to cost share if they're willing to replace that problematic tree to a less problematic tree, but still keeping a tree. So those are my thoughts.
Can I add one more question? This might be a silly question, but I'm not familiar enough with the requirements. One of the problems with the sidewalks is because when they're, you know, disrupted from underneath and they are a flat, hard surface, that they'll crack, right? Or they'll just disrupt the seams. And I don't know what ADA requirements are for sidewalks, but would it be possible to have portions of sidewalks that maybe go around a really big old tree that are gravel and then meet in with the sidewalk? Or does that break ADA requirements for the city?
I don't know that I can answer the ADA part of it. I have seen cities that do go around the trees. Like there's some of those in Salt Lake where you can see that they've just gone around the tree. We can look into that stuff. I'm sorry, I don't.
Yeah, that's okay. Just a thought to consider. I would just, is all else being equal, I would really love to preserve the trees as much as possible.
And so
when we can't offer a replacement or require a replacement.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right. Next item is a report on the action item related to expansion strategies for the public works facility.
Thanks. And I asked the mayor if I could tee this one up too, because this is a portion of a bigger question, which we have discussed in different ways and in different meetings. It came up in the strategic planning meetings, and that is a future expansion plan, perhaps you could call it that, for our public works facilities. And so John Rueckert, our public works director, has been working on some ideas for expanding in place. It's not our only option, as you know, and we've talked about perhaps relocating public works to have a larger presence on the west side of the of Redwood Road, which may be really important to us in the future, but we're not ready to really put all the options on the table tonight. This is a report on one particular option, and based on your feedback tonight, if you want us to look at other options, we will do a similar dive into other options. We probably should do that before you make a decision, but tonight really is really John's good work on putting a lot of thought to what could we do if we don't expand on a different site? Could we? Is there an option for expanding in place? And I appreciate John's work on this. I think you'll be happy to see this proposal or this idea.
All right. So this is our building here. We moved into this 20 years ago next month. So 2005, November of 2005, we moved into this building. And then about 2012, we built the Parks Building when the Parks Department moved down into Public Works because they were over at Hatch Park, and that facility was obviously way too small for us as we grew. So a quick shout out here. This is I got these pictures. I took these pictures from the fire department's their big aerial lift. They had brought it down to do a training for fire extinguishers, so they took us up in it. So it was awesome. So quick shout out to them, but this picture is from our aerial imagery. This was actually just taken a couple weeks ago, and you can kind of see how our yard is just packed full of stuff and trucks, and you'll see over there on the east fence line, we have a bunch of pipe and different things that we're trying to store outside, but as you know, these trucks are expensive. These plow trucks are $250,000 to $300,000+ each, and we don't have anywhere to store them but outside. So,
John, are all three structures ours, and that entire lot is ours?
Yes, everything you see on the screen, up to that that fence line over there on the east, where the pipe is, the blue pipe, is ours. The red roof is the Parks Building, obviously, and then that other one right to the east of it is our material storage, or bulk material storage, where we have sand and salt.
Can you tell us which of the buildings are like used for, you know, office space, or which are housing trucks and storage?
So all of our office space is at that lower building. Yeah, right there. That's our entire office space area.
So and the orange top building is all
that's
storage?
That's all storage for the parks equipment.
And there is some shop space in that lower building, correct?
Correct, yes. Yeah, we have the mechanic. The fleet shop is in there, and the water department has some space. Also, the other half is our warehouse where we have storage, and we keep other trucks like the sweeper and things that need to be kept inside. So as I looked at it, we have this property. This is right to the north of us. It's just an empty piece of property that it has a drainage ditch for Davis County maintains that runs through there. And the ideas kind of started thinking about, well, you can't really build anything on it because it has an easement, but what if we could cover it up and park stuff on top of it? How would that expand what we can do with this property that we have? We don't own this property. It's actually owned by FedEx. So there would have to be some acquisition to get it. So I kind of laid out some things. I said, what are our needs? So we do have needs for our office space. I mean, in the summertime, we have, there's 28 full-time employees down there. And then in the summer, we'll get up to, six or so seasonal employees. And we're all trying to pack in there and do work and stuff. So, and then we have the police department. They have a mobile mini that they have some officers in down there just to the south of the parks building. And they have need for expanding office space from even up here at City Hall down to the west side. So that's stuff that we'd like to incorporate as we look at this building a little bit closer. I mean, the stuff I'm showing you is really a kind of a 30,000 foot view level of possibly what we could do. We haven't really lined out any floor plan stuff. So other needs are just more efficient storage. I mentioned the pipe that's over there on the east fence line. So this would give a place to store that pipe in some vertical type racks, some more efficient storage racks that could be closed up and kept out of the weather. Probably one of our biggest things is we need enclosed truck storage. So this is an additional building that could hold six of the snowplow trucks, and kind of lined everything up so we could get everything parked inside. All the stuff that's outside along the fence lines are just trailers and placeholders for like the V-box spreaders when we take them out of the trucks in the summertime. With other vehicles, we just had some open covered parking, so we can help just keep things a little bit more covered up. And then this would just be like a cold storage building that we wouldn't heat or anything. We have like garbage cans that we get that are unassembled. We have to have a place to store those. I just kind of lined up, see if you could fit vehicles in there. So there'd be a place maybe if we needed to store some extra vehicles that didn't have to necessarily be in heated storage. So these are just some ideas that we threw out. So with that, we've been working with Blaylock on the Hatch Park stuff. So we kind of just hit him up and said, hey, maybe you look at this plan and maybe come down and if you could give us some ideas of what you think. And they said, sure, yeah, we could come down and look at it. And they kind of took a look and they said, well, here's some questions. Can the new vehicle storage building be relocated to allow for pull-through bays? So maybe things that we didn't consider as I laid this out. And that's actually a great point, because this current layout, we would have to either, pull in and back out a big truck. So a little bit more risk there. Bulk storage, typically you only need to access it from one side. And we kind of have, with this layout, you could access it from this area from both sides if we were to acquire that property. So they kind of were thinking of some different ideas there. And then also they're looking at, do we need to expand onto that second piece of property that we would have to acquire? So does this garage that we're putting over there, does it have to go there? Can we put it somewhere else and make more efficient use of the layout of this property? And then could a single-story building save costs? Because with the two-story building, kind of like I threw in the plans there, yeah, the footprint's smaller, but then you have requirements for elevators and that kind of thing. So it just adds more cost to the building. So this was kind of their quick stab at possible things that they could do. They have been doing a lot of these public works projects. So they actually have a lot of recent experience working with like Logan City. I think they did some stuff for, and I can't remember. They had a whole list of people that they'd worked for. So they had taken that bulk storage building and moved it over to the east fence line. So, you know, since that only has to be accessed from one side, and that made it so all those truck bays could be pulled through, which is actually a great idea. And then kind of left everything the same there. Here we go. So, and then their second stab was, well, what if we didn't acquire the property? Could we still do something with what you want to accomplish? And so this one, the key points of this one is that just relocated that storage building still to the east fence line. You still can get the pull through stuff, and it kind of just reorients to free up a little bit of space. But what we're missing out on, I think, with and it shifts that cold storage garage over to that east fence line too. I think that one thing that we miss out with this plan is there's a lot of trailers and stuff that we still have to park that aren't really accounted for in this plan. And that extra piece of property next to us, we can really park stuff on that. It also expanded this to a one-story office building, so you get a little bit bigger footprint. So that also takes away parking for employees, vehicles as well. So,
John, like I said, while you have that up,
you want to go back to this one?
I had the other thought that the back part of the existing office building, can we remodel that into the offices and move that to even an offsite location? What goes on in those current shops back there? And I totally agree that two stories would be just really expensive. But I do like this idea. We lose a little bit of parking up front, but maximize that lot.
Yeah.
I have a question on the pipes. I think it's the pipes and pallets.
Yes.
Would it be possible to just make, maybe going to option two, the picture, but just expanding bulk storage or even cold storage, because I assume they don't need to be heated, out a little bit and having the back wall be the pipe storage? Or is that an access issue? Because then you could probably park trailers over where the pipe is and use that instead of that extra land as a trailer spot, or additional parking if you lose your front parking. But I'm just wondering whether the pipes and pallets need to take that big of a footprint on their own, or whether they could be in addition on the back wall of one of the other structures.
Yeah, there's definitely stuff we can look at. So I know that the pipe stuff I wanted to have so it was enclosed and at least covered up. The current structure that we have, let me go back here. This structure with the number two on it, there's really nothing that's covered back there. I mean, possibly could extend those roof lines and make it so it's covered but open. So that is a possibility. I mean, with the moving that bulk storage, that means that we also have to rebuild that structure. Mm-hmm. And we already own it right now. It's not an expensive structure per se, is like building livable, occupiable space, but it's still, there's a cost to it. I think they gave me a cost. It's not included in the cost estimates I have, and it's probably around $800,000 to about $1 million to rebuild just that structure.
John, as I've dumped stuff out there on our our yard cleanup day. I've wondered what that is in that southeast corner, and it says 30-yard RO.
Oh, it's just a roll-off dumpster.
Okay.
So.
Well, I like the idea of covering pipes, covering trucks. I mean, they're assets. They're city assets. Even when they're unused pipes, if they crack or weather, then we have to replace them. And so I definitely agree that things should be covered whenever possible. I'm just wondering if there's any way to consolidate, you know, the difference between an $800,000 20,000 square foot unit and a 25,000 square foot unit for $850,000 might be better than a structure over here for pipes and pellets and then a structure over here, you know. So I'm just wondering whether we could save a little by just consolidating and having less. I think there were four projects listed, you know, maybe making it into three projects.
Yeah, for sure. We could probably look at what we could do to consolidate. I mean, with this current configuration you have on the screen, that property right to the east of it, we don't own, so that's FedEx's property. So we couldn't use the back side of that, but we could use the wall for our fence, basically. So kind of skipping ahead here to just some cost estimates they threw out here. So like they're about $450 a square foot for occupiable space. So with the basic, you know, our basic layout, they were close to $7 million just to rebuild that building on the front. That storage unit for the trucks, $1.4 million. So anyways, it adds up to close to about almost $11 million here. You would still have property acquisition and cost to like bury that open ditch. And this didn't include, like I said, the cost to rebuild that bulk storage facility. So, you know, you're possibly in the neighborhood of $12 to $15 million for these type of renovations on this property.
Have we examined vacancies in the surrounding warehouses? I mean, for $7 million, we could sure lease somebody.
We haven't done that. That's a great idea. We've kind of toyed with the idea of renting some warehouse space for storage of equipment and trucks. It makes it a little bit inconvenient in the winter to not have your trucks close by, but maybe there are some possibilities close by too. But we haven't looked at that. So
or maybe starting from scratch, but a vacancy of a large warehouse.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you start adding up all of the renovations of your house, you're like, we should just move. And so that's what I'm wondering is like, for this many million dollars, maybe one large facility and just moving might be, and then you can build it out now knowing what you know and planning for the future differently.
Yeah.
And get your wish list all checked off for about the same price than just hodgepodging everything.
Mm-hmm.
I also would prefer not to try and acquire that property and deal with potential, you know, water table issues and easement issues and purchase price. That would be my thought.
Sorry. One thing I talked to Ken about a few weeks ago, and I have a little bit of an update, so I'll just share that with everybody. One of the benefits of two-hour church is we don't need as many church buildings. And so I'd gotten a report that two churches in North Salt Lake were going to be for sale, two LDS churches. The list came out, and there was only one, and it's the Coventry building. And it is a nightmare. So I would not recommend we pursue that, but I was hoping there was one maybe down somewhere flat that we could turn into a public works office or something, but so that's not an option. And I'm sure that people in that neighborhood would appreciate that we're not running snowplows out of the tree belt.
Although they might love it because they'll get first rights to, yeah. And that road needs to be plowed. Thank you for this. I feel like this is a great example of what I love about the city, of being super proactive with these kinds of capital improvements. I do feel like, in general, for the price tag of $7 million, I don't see a $7 million problem that we need to be solving immediately. I see as a problem the storage, the covered storage, because you have such a good point that these are really expensive vehicles, and they sustain more damage when they're out under the elements. So I think the prioritizing covered parking for them, I think, is really important. And that's something that I would think we could focus on fairly immediately, as well as with the pipe and the material, because those are assets that will be diminished if they are not stored properly. I do think with the other larger, especially the large buildings, at this point, and there's, of course, so much I don't understand about how Public Works operates, but at that price tag, I feel like this is a project that needs to go farther back in the list of to-dos in the city for that $7 million price tag. Like, for example, the office building, even with 26 employees, do all 26 of those like have their own desks? Is that what the plan is?
No, they don't all have their own desks in there. But, I mean, every office space that we have is occupied. The building, the way it was originally designed, were for the planning and building department, so the offices were bigger. So the layout of space is inefficient for what we need.
I think I've been in the office room. And I agree with you. Like the way that it is laid out, I think it's a little hard to get to where the offices are, and like, so maybe money on redesigning the interior so that it can serve 26 employees. Because I think that amount of space probably could, but it's not the way that it's set up right now. I think that is really problematic. But speaking for myself, those are the workable space for the office employees, covering the vehicles, covering the pipe storage. Those, I think, really feel like fairly immediate needs. And the rest, for myself, feel like that would be something much farther down the road while we have a lot of other expensive projects that we're doing.
We used to have our planning commission meetings out there when that building was new.
I think that was a Jorn.
I want to thank John for being proactive. He did this on his own without, I didn't ask him to do this, neither did David, and he came to us with some ideas and said he'd been thinking about this, and I appreciate that proactivity. I think I appreciate the council's feedback, and we'll look at all of these ideas, including the idea of maybe being able to provide some covered space at a little less cost and maybe not building something right now. I think that's an interesting idea. We also have vehicles in the police department that need to be covered, and Craig and I have talked many times about different ways to do that, and so we have those challenges. The other thing, I think, on the heels of this that might be important for us to do a little bit of work on, that is the staff, is to perhaps price out, at least from at a high level, what it would cost to acquire 5 or 6 acres in the location we think is available, and or a location on the west side of the city, and factor in the costs, the benefits of selling this property, because it does have a value, and perhaps looking at, as Councilmember Jackson suggested, perhaps it's better not to renovate, but to really do kind of a 50-year plan rather than a 10 or 15-year plan for close to the same amount of money. And that's what we're really talking about, is extending the life of the facility. And so when you look at it that way, it starts to make sense that you look at the final option, even if it's a little more expensive, because it can buy you a couple of decades. And so from a value standpoint, much better for the taxpayer and for our long-term financial health. So we'll look at those things if that's something the council would like to see. I don't think it would take a lot of work. I don't think we have to pay architects and experts to do that. I think Blaylock has been a relatively low cost partner for us, and we can use them. And since they have done 6 or 7 public works facilities in the last 3 years or 5 years, I think we can come back and show you at least what we think it might cost to do that. So,
but just to clarify, we would have to bond to pay for this, right?
We would have to bond.
I'm getting a lot of heat about the bonding for the Hatch Park, and at this point, I feel not interested in taking on an additional bond for infrastructure.
Sure.
I think the public perception of that would feel excessive. But when Hatch Park is finished and we're no longer taking that heat, I will likely feel different about that.
That's a good point. Yeah, thank you.
All right, let's take a quick break and reconvene in 6.3 minutes.
You do the math.